On today's episode of the Telehealth Heroes podcast, we get to listen to Darius Campina Bacote talk about his experience with telemedicine and psychology and his whole experience doing this. Darius, welcome to the episode.
Thank you. Appreciate it, Brandon. Always a pleasure. And thank you for bringing me on the show.
Great. So how did you first get into psychology?
Yeah, so that's a broad question. I love it. I got into psychology when I was in my sophomore year of college and, sophomore year of high school when I was listening to the teacher talking about Ivan Pavlov and the dogs, right? Classical conditioning and all that lovely stuff. And it really clicked to me. I'm like, wow, this stuff makes sense. I love talking to people, want to help people in certain ways. Now we got some things with this Ivan Pavlov going on. This is really interesting to me. The other piece of it is that I wish for the life of me that in the ages of 13 through 17, that there was someone there to talk with. Not that I didn't have my parents, right. Or didn't have that. I just realized that's a really critical age. And I wanted to work as a clinical psychologist or in any profession, assisting that population primarily.
So do you work in that population now?
I do. So I work for Dallas County Juvenile Department. I am the supervisor and manager of the Functional Family Therapy Team, FFT, where we do in-home family therapy. Now we're doing it virtually, which goes into Doxy Me, right? We're doing it virtually due to the pandemic, COVID-19, and the different variants that are coming out. And so work with individuals aged 10 to 17, work with them in the capacity of providing family therapy once they're adjudicated and leave the detention center.
So what are some of the biggest challenges that these children and these families have that require a psychologist to come in and intervene? And what is that clinical problem that you're solving?
Great question there, Brandon. I would say if I were to boil it down, so I've been at Dallas County since 2012, July of 2012. And I would say in the past, 8-9 years, if I were to boil it down your question there, it would be related to there's anxiety and there's depression. The underlying symptoms really focus on that. Family conflict, the reason why, what I like to say when I'm doing certain trainings is why a youth ran away from their home, male, female, non-gender individual, the reason why they left the home may be very different than why we believe it is. So I get a female youth, 13 years old, that ran away from home, runaway charge. Why she ran away may be very different, right? Whether it's to be with a partner, whether it's to work, whether legally or illegally, to try to get money for the family. A lot of these family conflicts come from a lot of surface of not having access to resources and being really depressed and anxious because of that, particularly when you're seeing on the media, social media and things like that, of individuals that do have everything or do have what you desired, whatever that would be. So hopefully that's a long-winded answer, my man, but that's how I see it.
So this is an absolutely great answer to my question. How do they get to you?
Yeah, sure. So the way that the process works is they commit an offense, right? I remember speaking with a supervisor some years ago. You know, your numbers are a little bit down. I'm wondering why individuals are not matriculating into the program. There's less crime in the past few months. People didn't hurt anybody. Maybe that's why we do. She didn't like that answer, but that's what's going on. That's what I said. I said my truth. Yeah. So to answer your question directly, individuals would do something in the community, Dallas County, and whether that is related to theft. Oftentimes, the most notorious one would be, unfortunately, would be assault related. Whether you're assaulting a public servant or a family member, we do have individuals right now in our caseload that have been charged with murder. They've completed some of their sentence and they're coming out in the community to see how they're going to do, or else you're going to get a life sentence. Things of that nature, or go to a juvenile prison. So they get from us too. So they would go to the detention center after they're arrested for the offense. Then there's three different options that occur. You either go back out into the community, which would be, included in my program. Right. You would go to a placement facility for 3 to 6 months, 3 to 9 months. At that point, you would go be integrated, reintegrated back into the community, would come into my program likely. And the third option is that juvenile prison. And so I'm evaluating and determining the fit for the families that are coming out. And then we get them involved.
So really the crime is almost a cry for help, and it's because of the crime that they're led to you, and then you're able to intervene at that point. Are you guys, and you're preventing any further crime by intervening and helping the families and the youth going forward. Are you guys working on anything to help prevent that stuff before they even get to their crime?
Well said, because the preventative measures for me are more important than after the fact.
Right.
After little Johnny or Jane burned down the house, that's already we got other
It's
issues
done. The house is
gotta
gone.
Get before we do it.
Yeah.
Come on now. That's the only house we got. All right. And so what the other part of my job, which I didn't realize until I got into this position, is that there's other individuals in the home. Okay. Mm-hmm. There's Susie. There's Jackie. There's Bobby. 8-year-old. Listen, we want to include them into them. So there's preventative measures that are happening in the family. And then other ways that we have preventive measures, that's other sectors of Dallas County that we're involved with. Mm-hmm. There's it's the I'm trying to remember the exact, it's your, that the program where we're ensuring that they don't go into the detention.
Right,
so there's ways that we can avert or, you know, revert around so that individuals do not, you know, even make it to the detention center. So we're trying to do preventive measures with certain individuals that have not, that are high risk or at risk, or the new term that I've heard is at help. You don't want to say at risk, they're at help, there are needs for help there. So that's where we do that.
You know, it's interesting that you highlight brothers and sisters, because usually it's one individual, but that one individual is a symptom of a failure in the family that's going to impact all the other youth who are coming along in that family. And so,
Brandon, that's it. There's a term that I learned about 2 weeks ago that I'm going to apply right now. They said the youth, they told me this term. They brought it to me. Say less. I'm not sure if you've heard that term before. So that's a very positive thing that you would say to someone when they said something that is right on point. Oh, Brandon, say less. That's, so I'm going to use that term there. Say less. Not in a negative way, in a positive way, in the sense of that's exactly what's happening. We're helping out a significant amount of individuals and the other family members in that. It's not just one person. And that's one of the things that gets me excited when you say that, because oftentimes if we were to fix, let's just say, Johnny, I don't like to use the term fix because I don't think we fix. I think we address certain issues and the goal is to empower individuals to continue that path. If we were to address the issue that brought Johnny to the detention center, would that solve all the problems in the family? Right? 95% of people say, no. I mean, we got Jackie who's doing, so we're doing this and that. This is just an added stressor onto that. Great. So there's a lot of stuff that's going on. There's a lot of roles that are happening in the family. However, just addressing or fixing this issue does not change. That's why there's a need for family therapy.
Mm-hmm.
And for those 5% or so that say, yes, no, if you were to address the issues that John is going, then we'll have no other problems. I would like to challenge them on that. We go ahead and do family therapy for them. Let's see how it works out. We start uncovering all this different stuff. Grandma's in the basement, comes to a session, tells us everything that's going on, Brandon.
Yep.
That's what happens.
Gotcha. So you play this very important role in helping these families, these at-help families, get the service and help and the correction that they need. What is the challenge that you face that led you to seek out telemedicine to solve?
Yeah, so the biggest issue that happened regarding that, right, is that I was leery because that in-person contact is so crucial. The non-verbals, 85 to 90% new research in 2021 is saying 95% of communication is non-verbals. And so I don't want to miss anything because of a break in radio silence. If something happens with technology or any other reason. However, there was not another alternative. This is just what you, Brandon, and I remember a comedian years ago that said, this is just what you do.
Yeah.
They were talking about taking a pill, a vitamin. The doctor told me to take this vitamin. I heard this and that. I'm like, I asked him later before he leaves, how long do I take this for? A few weeks, a few months? He said, this is just what you do. You take a pill every day until you die, right? And so it became a situation, Brandon, where this is just what we do. And so finding the correct platform to utilize was the issue. It's not about whether we, go to telemedicine or not. You're doing it. Which one would you prefer? And I prefer Doximi. I'm just being very, very honest because of the lot of things that occur in other platforms. I've seen stability here. The other piece to answer that is that I also work in private practice. Substantial amount of the work that I do is related. In fact, I had one just a few days ago working with veterans. I got a contract with the VA through a VES, Veterans Evaluation Services. So see a plethora of veterans that have served our country. And the only platform they use is Doximi. And they were asking, they asked what we preferred. I actually said Doximi. And they said, now that we've got all the different things from the thousands of providers, we are only going with Doximi. So it's not only in my full-time job, Brandon, but in my private practice where I see veterans as well as families, individual couples, therapy. That was the mode of choice for me because there was no other option in that sense. One other piece, if I may, I know it's a long run-on sentence there. they did give us an option as well to not, for the veterans to not see them virtually, right? And so I was thinking about that because there's so much information I'm trying to gather for the VA, and I realized that it was actually more beneficial to many veterans to do it virtually, right? One specific example, there's a military MST is what it's called, military sexual trauma. I talked with a woman who stated, it really still gets me, right? She said, I couldn't, when I saw that your name, Darius, didn't know what that, I knew that that was a male and I had been sexually assaulted by a male. I didn't want to see you, but now that it's telehealth, I'm able to move the camera. I'm able to not look. There's things that we could not have done. I don't know how, if I can say that more importantly, there's no way that this woman would have done. She said, I was going to cancel my appointment if I had to go in. This is the only, this method actually was the best method for
her. There's no way that she would have got care if it wasn't for telemedicine. Yeah, that's amazing.
Brandon, 100%. I don't like to say that. I like to say 99. Mm. No. 100%. Wow. After talking to her, there's no way she would have done it. She was crying, talking about how, whether it's Doxy, I'm going to be honest, whether it's Doxy or any other platform, I'm not able to do it. I talked to a veteran who was in bed covered up. I haven't been able to leave the bed because of the significant pain in my back and shoulders. I can do a session with someone like this. Now, come on, Brandon. We were missing people in rural areas. And I didn't realize it, right? The veteran, I'm going to go out to where no one is. Makes sense. Stereotypically speaking, I don't want to be around people, this and that. But guess what, Johnny? Guess what, Bobby? You're going to have to drive 500 miles to Dallas to see someone. Oh, no, I'm not doing that. So now we can bring us.
Right,
to
right.
You. Okay,
right.
Come on.
And they're
now
missing out on the care. They're either, the option is come to me and do it to me in my terms, or I'm not going to do it at all. Okay.
That's 100% it. Yeah. That's it. That's exactly right. Say less. Brandon,
exactly.
Say less.
So how did you first get introduced to telemedicine?
That is a really good question. It was something that was recommended to me by a colleague, by a peer. I love the in-person, love to be in the trenches. I actually didn't want to be a supervisor or manager. I just wanted to work in those trenches and things like that. However, that's a whole other story of how I got to that direction. And so I was working with a colleague and she was stating, you know, telehealth is the wave of the future. There's going to be things that are going to happen and you can expand your practice if you can see far-reaching individuals. There is something called CyPAC. If you may or may not be familiar with it, that was just introduced a few years ago. And as a psychologist specifically, it's a mobility program. So 17, I think we're at 22 states are able to do it. How am I going to do in person? It is skyrocketed in my practice 600% integrating.
Really?
So after I heard it, I'm like, and then the pandemic happened. I kind of got full. Okay, we got to do this now. Okay.
And you're doing it now. You're totally all in at this point.
100%. So there is 99%. There is one client that I've seen that's an adolescent, does not want to be seen virtually, but 100% of my private practice, 99.9% is definitely telehealth. And I'm using.
No, that's fantastic. And I appreciate you. I appreciate you as a Doximi user. And talk a little bit about the workflow when you're working with some of these patients, whether you're private practice patients or your public service patients. How does telemedicine fit into the new workflow of this virtual visit? And what are some, so tell me about that workflow first.
Or do you have more?
Well, I'm going to have some follow-up questions after this. Like, what were the challenges you faced
and how did you
overcome them?
For sure. So the workflow, it's actually helped out tremendously. So there were times where I'm working part-time. If I'm leaving, our house here, myself and my married partner, give her a shout out there, Caitlin, right? If I'm leaving our house here and going to the office and a veteran doesn't show up, and to be clear, I don't get paid if they don't show up. So I may not get paid. There's things that occur. Now it's been, I don't want to use another platform. If I'm helping certain individuals and definitely love in person. However, if there's an appointment that's missed, which is frequent in regards to veterans, I would say there's about a 55-60% no show rate. Because 90% of the individuals that I'm seeing are related to PTSD. And the number one thing, if I can just shout out, I did a recent, I was a part of a training. Number one thing they said, and this person was yelling passionately, Brandon, they said, the number one indicator of PTSD is avoidance. Uh-huh. If you don't have avoidance, then you don't have PTSD, right? So what you're telling me is that we have individuals whose one of their primary symptoms is avoidance. But we want you to come and talk to us, okay? That's why the no-show rate is high. And so for me, back to your original question, my friend, the workflow has been amazing because if Sally doesn't show up, I'm able to integrate other individuals. I'm able to do something else during that time instead of driving there, driving back. The tax on resources, we could talk about fossil fuels being used and stuff like that. If you want to go that far, at the end of the day, it helps my workflow significantly because when there's no shows, there's stuff that I can integrate in when previously
you just bounce from one thing. Hey, this person is show here. I'm going to do the next thing. And you're able to keep yourself busy because of the flexibility.
That's it.
Oh, that's awesome.
100%.
So exactly. What are some of the challenges? Right. You mentioned no shows, people not showing up, but what are some of the other challenges that you've seen as you've moved over to this virtual care model, and how did you overcome them?
Yeah, sure. Yeah, the number one issue that we've been having, it's actually been in regards to Dallas County, my full-time job, where, and it's really sad for me. I don't want to speak sad and say it's not sad for them. They might be funny or might, I don't know. I would just talk about my emotions, not other people's emotions, right? For me, it's sad that there's individuals that do not have access to care. So they do not have access to a remote form so that we can provide services. And so that has been an extreme challenge where either A, individuals don't have a working cell phone. They have a cell phone that is a flip phone. No shade, as they say. No knock about that. A phone is a phone. However, if we're trying to do something such as this, there's certain bandwidth that's needed. There's certain requirements that are needed. The other piece is that, and I hear this, I can resonate. I don't like to say I understand because I don't know what people are going through 100%, right? But I can see, I can relate, right? I don't understand completely. However, so one of the things that I can relate to, not understand, is that, hey, I got a data plan. I got 15 minutes left and you're telling me we're going to do therapy with my 15 minutes. Are you paying Brandon for my cell phone bill? Are you, I'm just trying to get on Wi-Fi. Where's the Wi-Fi? You know, at the one point, the libraries were closed. I can't get on a hotspot. Yeah. I don't have a hotspot. That's an elite stance to say, just get on a hotspot. Come on, man. You don't have an unlimited plan. Come on now, right?
Yeah.
That's an elitist stance. So that was one of the barriers. And so there's ways that we were helping them connect with individuals in the community, as well as providing hotspots to certain families. We're looking at that. So that was a huge barrier because we got all this stuff. We got this platform that's going to work. And individuals are not able to utilize it because we weren't looking at it from a socioeconomic standpoint.
Probably a lot of the families who are having issues are those who are struggling financially and not able to provide some of the luxuries of these internet connections and nice fancy devices and whatnot. Yeah.
That's exactly right. Which for me, Brandon, loops back in. The reason why, I talked to several individuals. I could tell you example and story after story. I'm trying to get resources for my family. Mm-hmm. I stole this because of that. I had a youth crying to me saying, hey, you know, did you look at my offense? Did you see what I stole? I got a theft of under $200. Did you see what I stole? I got tears crying down. Mm. This is when I was doing an assessments before. Milk, baby formula, right? Small clothes. I'm trying to feed my family. I'm trying to do that. I'm trying to help where my mom and dad are not doing that. So there's different resources that individuals are lacking, and a smartphone, as they say, right? Or even a not smartphone. I don't want to say dumb now, but a not smartphone. I don't even got that. I'm trying to get resources, but now we can't.
What's been the most successful solution that you've presented to them to help overcome this bandwidth issue?
Wow, that's a huge one. It's for them gaining access to someone that does. And it seems like an easy solution, right? However, do you have a brother, sister? Does your partner, is there an uncle or aunt? Does anyone, is there a way that you can gain access to that for 30 minutes, 45 minutes? One of the things that I didn't realize, and I almost wanted to use it myself. I still might, Brandon. I didn't know that for free libraries rent out.
I didn't know that. I knew they had internet, but I didn't know they had hotspots you could rent out.
Right. I know. And not to say that I don't have my own and things of that nature, but I didn't know. So having them, directing them to the correct resources in the functional family therapy program, the last model is called the generalization phase. And what we do is generalize the information that was taught and give them natural resources that are already existing in the community, as well as trying to integrate some new resources. And now I know, I didn't know that. I'm teaching you too now here, Brandon. They have hotspots. And so
and you're teaching everybody else who's listening to this podcast as well. So go get hotspots at libraries for anybody who doesn't have internet. So that's a fantastic solution.
That's it, but don't talk too much.
You got to check it out, right? At least not in Dallas. At least not in Dallas. So
I'm just kidding, yeah.
Where do you think you would be if you didn't adopt telemedicine?
That's interesting. Yeah, I love that. For me, I would have lost a substantial amount of money. I'm just being very transparent in regards to my private practice. I would have lost probably 80%, 90%. or more income regarding that, because I didn't feel safe enough to put myself in a position. And I have a very small office, and so I don't have the breadth to even accommodate some of the standards that are necessary. 6 feet away, individuals mm-hmm. may or may not be wearing masks, regardless of your viewpoint of that. And there's certain standards that at the facility that I'm at, that they say you have to have a mask mandate. There's several veterans that I spoke with that I'm not wearing a mask. It doesn't matter. I'm not wearing. So before I even get to do the assessment, right, we're going to have some barriers. And so even trying to do that in person would not have been feasible. In regards to Dallas County, that would have just been extremely detrimental. I'm not even sure. I didn't fathom what would occur, because we are the most at risk. I've been told this by my boss's boss. We are the most at risk because we're going into the home. The probation officer is coming to the door. How's everything going? We're going in that home. Okay. Right. And so to not be able to do it virtually would have devastated the community. I would imagine that we would needed to have held on. They may have dropped people off of my, I have seven different clinicians. They would have cut many of them. We'll give you some back once everything goes. There would have been hundreds and hundreds, if not thousands, of individuals that would not have received
That's
services.
Incredible. What an impact that you're making with telemedicine. How has your perspective of healthcare changed from the time that you first got into it as a middle school boy till yourself now? How has that perspective changed for you?
That perspective has changed drastically. So my father is he's not going to want me to say that. I hope he listens to this episode, my friend. He's a medical director. I want to make sure I say it again. He's a medical director for a company, for a large health insurance company. And I never understood as a middle schooler growing up. He said, please don't talk to people about what I do. Right? My parents are doctors. My mother has a doctorate in nursing. My dad has a doctorate as a medical doctorate. And you first went from being an OBGYN. I don't really like the system. I don't know why things are approved or not approved. And then he went to that side as being a medical director. And it took me, when you talk about what has changed in my viewpoint, I did not understand what my father meant when he said, don't tell people my job. Oh, wait, hold on. Now that I'm older, wait, you're the, now I'm getting all these different things. I'm getting kicked back from, hey, you know, you provided services, but we're not sure if they, you know, maybe 30-minute sessions instead of, we're not going to pay you this rate. Oh, wait, Dad, you're the person that's decided. Okay, that's why you don't like, okay, now wait a minute, right? And so that has changed my perspective significantly. If you're talking about just in general about healthcare, I didn't realize the barriers to treatment that individuals have. I talk to colleagues that say, I'm just throwing out, being transparent, and hopefully people can hear that in my voice. Blue Cross Blue Shield, Brandon, they pay the most in Texas. Okay, whether you're a social worker, psychologist, or an LPC, any profession, they pay more. Okay, and so I've talked to different individuals that own practices. I'm not taking anyone but Blue Cross Blue Shield, Brandon. If you got another, I don't want to necessarily speak other things out there. If you don't have that, maybe you got Medicaid. I'm not taking that because BCBS is paying at a higher, I'm talking $60 to $70 more per session for the same service. And I didn't realize that. So for me, I want to take anyone who gets there. I'm paneled with 25 different places because no matter what you have, I want to be able to take it. And so to answer your question even more directly, that's probably the number one thing. I did not realize the insurance world. They taught me, Brandon, in school, how to talk to people, assess for suicidality, do assessments, talk to people about issues that are going on, schizophrenia work. They didn't tell me about the health insurance. How are they gonna? One is $30 for an hour. One is $136. Wow. Okay, we're talking $100 difference between. Oh, then I'm not gonna take Sally. How about if Sally needs help, Brandon? How about if Sally needs help more than Bart with BCBS? Come on.
So, how's your perspective of healthcare changed because of your experience with telemedicine?
My experience with healthcare has changed. Several health insurance companies were at first saying, well, I'm not sure if they're going to be covering services that are telemed. We want in person. And that changed drastically. And so I know for me, I was reticent to do it because, as I stated earlier, I was worried about the nonverbal communication, things that would happen. And I've realized that you can still get that same flair. And that same quality of care can still be there with telemedicine. I was definitely reticent. I wasn't on board. I didn't want to do it at all. Having a stable connection, what's going to happen? How about if someone has a psychiatric emergency while they're talking to you? Where are they located exactly? They say they're located here. Where are they? There's all these different concerns that flew in through my head. The main one being, what's the quality of care going to be? And I realized as I began providing services to the clients that I had prior to that, and I asked them very candidly, Dr. C, Dr. Darius, whatever they call me, right? Darius, this seems very similar as if we're in person. This seems very similar. Some of my clients were, regardless of me, Brandon, some of my clients were reticent to engage in telemedicine. They don't know how it works. They're not sure. It's just a link here. Do I got to sign up for stuff, sign my life away? Or there's going to be ads everywhere. I got to click on something. I don't want peanut butter. Why are they saying that? All this different stuff that happens. I was able to dispel a lot of those myths. And so it's changed drastically for me. And my views shift from one of not wanting to deal with that, or, you know, that's the wave of the future. And the future's here now. Now you got to come on.
Yeah. You got to jump on the ship. So you mentioned the patients and their perspective. What do your patients think about telemedicine?
They were more reticent than me, Brandon, to be honest. They did not, I'm not sure what to do. Hey, I just got a link here. I send them the link, I click on it, then they're in, they put in their name, they're good, as it relates to DocsMe. And so that is something that they were very, very reticent. I had individuals that did not want to do it at all. I said, let's give it a shot. Let's see what that's like. Given the circumstances that are going on in our country, in our state, in our city, different mandates that are going around, let's give this a shot. And if it doesn't work, then we'll try and find another method. So they were very, very reticent. All of my clients, with the exception of one, stated that they wanted to transition to a telehealth after trying it. They all didn't want to do it, though, to be clear.
Right. Oh, yeah, interesting. But now they do. Now, what about going forward? What if you come back and say, hey, we could do in-person now? What would they decide to do?
They would. So I would say about 80% of my caseload would prefer, actually, what we're doing here. So being in a vehicle parked on the side of the road now, Brandon, not parked. I'm saying parked. Make sure you hear that.
You better be.
right, exactly, right? So not me, right, but the client being able to, this is what I hear so much. I want to do therapy. I want to work on this issue with my partner. I want to work on this anger management. I want to work on stress eating. I want to work on whatever issue. However, I don't have the time in my life to do that. I would traditionally, I would want to challenge that, right? What happens if you don't make time for it? What happens if this and that? Now I'm on the way to work. I get to work early. I go off to the side and I can have a therapy session now and then go straight to work instead of driving 45 minutes, right, to your office. There was a time prior to the pandemic that I was meeting an individual outside. We were meeting at different establishments because he moved further away and he didn't feel comfortable driving. That was one of his issues, was driving. And so now we can have these platforms. Now, if it were to shift back, answer your question directly, Brandon, he wouldn't do what? No, we're not going to meet at, and I'm not going to say a certain establishments. We can do it here and have the same quality.
Right. So, 80%. So they're in. Right. 80% would be like, yeah, keep doing this, go for it. That's fantastic.
Yeah, for sure.
So
for sure.
If you were to go back in time, what would you do different?
Oof. In regards to telehealth and integrating it, is that?
Yeah.
I think I would have jumped on board sooner, right? The full transparency. I waited a month when all the mandates came out and I didn't see any veterans for a month. And I, if I'm being honest with myself and honest with you, I think about it frequently of how many veterans were missed in that month, right? Mm-hmm. So answer your question, I would have jumped on to telehealth sooner. And I was like, okay, maybe they're going to stay. Maybe they're not going to stick. Let me see. Let me wait a month. And there's people that weren't serviced during that month. I would have jumped on board sooner is the true story for me.
What is the key to your success today?
Key to my success. And I love success. I was talking earlier to one of your colleagues, and success is such a robust topic. And for me, it's so subjective, right? And so I first want to appreciate that, my success, right? Being a hero here, being recognized, I want to acknowledge that first and foremost. The key to my success, I think, is, I was listening to a podcast and I really resonated with it, is grit. They said the number one quality of someone being able to persevere, when you think of the different individuals in your life, other people's life, or individual hallmark individuals that have made ridiculous change here and in the world, it's about grit. It's about things are going to happen that are negative. There are going to be some backslides. There's going to be, but being able to persevere is the key. And so I would argue that that's, for me, has been a large part of my journey, is being able to persevere, and that's led to the success that I believe subjectively that I've had.
Do you ever talk about what success means to your clients?
I do. One of the things that really struck me, I was talking to my the administrative assistant at the private practice that I own, And one of the things I asked her, you know, what does success mean to you? I asked my family, I asked different individuals. She said something that blew my mind, Brent, still sticks with me today. Love to share with you and the viewers here, listeners, is that she said, with some tears in her eye, I think that's important to note, the context there. She said, without a doubt, because a lot of times people have to think, she said it right off the bat. She said, I bet, which I asked you a question. That's an interesting response to that. What does success mean to you? I bet you, that's it. Woo, I love this. I bet you go to the grocery store and you get all the items that you need there without going to another store. I was like, I'm also sensing that's sensitive to her. I said, that may be happening. Success for me, doctor, is going to be going to the grocery store and not going to the, and it broke me. I'm going to be honest, not going to the bottom shelf here. I want Cocoa Krispies, not Cocoa, and I'm not trying to promote things, not right. Cocoa, you know, creepy or something, knockoff, right? Yeah. I have to go here because it's cheaper to go to another establishment, Walgreens here, then I go Walmart here, and then I go Ford. I bet you go to the grocery store, get items that you want, and you can ding them out and not worry, what is the total going to be, okay? Administrative assistant told me success means to me that I can go to a grocery store and purchase items that I want without worrying, that I'm not going to have enough money. That is success.
I mean, that's... taking that perspective, it totally makes you rethink about what you should be grateful for in this life. It's a lot of things we take for granted that I don't think about it. I just go to the store, I get it. But for some people, it is something. It's a challenge every day to keep things, to be able to purchase things all in one place, not having to stress about every little dollar and jump from place to place. And what is something people don't understand about success?
That's a lovely question. What I think people don't understand, I don't know if you can fully understand, but relate to or you know, insinuate regarding success, is how addictive it can be, right? A, of how addictive it can be, and B, second here, of how it's conformed by who you identify as important, okay? So success for me, I'll be very, very honest. My parents had nothing less than success. There's no option but success. You need to succeed. We got to the story that I've heard, the experience. I also am reticent to say the word story, because there was one time I really appreciate that story, sir, when I was on a train. This is not a story. This is my life. This is an experience. A story is a made up. Okay. So my experience, Brandon, that I heard from my parents is that they got together becoming doctors, and we need to go to the place in the United States that has the best opportunity to raise children. Okay, they looked at Cincinnati, Ohio, and that's where I grew up, Brandon, Cincinnati, Ohio. And so my brother, and I'm just saying this, I think it's important to note, brother, amazing, whether amazing or not, but amazing attorney based out of San Francisco, right? My sister finished this year Yale Divinity School. She went to Brown for undergrad. So we're talking high-level things here, got a doctorate. And so for me, answering your question directly, the thing about success that people don't really understand or get for me is, what do I do after this? Okay, now I got the doctorate. Okay, how can I be more successful? If you've been taught, if you've been told that you need to go a certain path, what happens when you make it to the top? What happens in certain things? And also, like I said, it's the context of individuals around you. Saw a documentary some years ago that stuck with me, one comment date at least, that said, show me your friends, Brandon. Show me your friends and I'll show you your future. Okay? Show me your friends and I'll show you your future. Very easy. So who are you around with? What does success mean to them? Wait a minute, maybe more important than what success means to me. If I associated with a lot of different individuals, they call the law of parties. I didn't know what it meant. Here when I came to tech, law of parties, the law of parties, if you're familiar, the viewers may not be familiar with it, is that if you throw a rock, there's five of us, you throw a rock at a car and we're all together, we all threw the rock, legally. We're all responsible for that. You went to party, you a lot of parties, right? Show me your friends and I'll show you your future. And so if you're around individuals that are going the direction and trajectory that you would like for yourself, it's about the people you're around as well as how that,
right.
How it's going to be addicting in the sense of where do you stop? I need to do something more. I need to do something more.
Right. The key is surround yourself with the people you want to be like.
That's it. That's well said. I love that.
So do you have any experiences of success from yourself or others around you that highlight this example you're talking about?
I do. I would be remiss if I didn't say, I asked all my family members, and it can be kind of awful, psychologists asking us questions about success. How is he going to, I finally pried it out of him, Brandon. And the one that, not to say that it rises to the top or anything, the one that sticks with me the most from my family members was my brother, Avante. And he stated very succinctly, Darius, success to me means having as few regrets in life as possible, right? And that really hits on some research that comes in, into 2020 and 2021, where a doctor had looked at hundreds of individuals who had passed away, and they're in their last moments of life within hours. And they stated, I wish I would have done this. I wish I would have done this. So this is unrelated to my brother saying this. These are just things that are tied in. Having a life success is having a life with as few regrets as possible. And I think that that's something that's really resonated in with me. Okay, how can I help you? What can I do here? And that's something that I really would like for your listeners and you know, viewers to even yourself, right? Myself, to contemplate that thought. I think that's really helpful in determining and defining success.
You know, when you graduate high school in your yearbook, you get to give a quote.
Yep.
And my quote was, leave high school with a feeling of I did, not a feeling of I wish I had.
Whoa.
And I apply that to my life, where I say, leave life with a feeling of I did, not a feeling of I wish I had. And so that kind of resonates, or it goes in line with what your brother said as well.
I love that, Brandon. I'm going to chew on that a lot. I think that's something that I want to share with my clients as well. That's a really good, I love that. Yeah.
Yep. So we'll put it up on a plaque for you, put it on your wall.
I'm going to do it.
Great. So I would love your input on, what does the future of healthcare look like?
Future of healthcare. I believe that there's going to be a healthy mix, a hybrid model. I actually developed I developed it. My team also helped me do this for Dallas County, a hybrid model of treatment. That's going to include telehealth as a center portion of that, mixed with the in-person. It brings me back to another anecdote, if you will, of a father that was wanting to be a part of therapy, but he was a truck driver. Nothing bad or good. Not saying he's 100% gone, right? And they're trying to make ends meet, so he's taking double shifts. I want to be a part of this, but I'm in Arkansas, but I'm in Maine, but I'm here. Let's get this person involved. It took me months to get this person involved. Okay, let's call him on the phone. Let's get a speakerphone. Okay, we actually found out we can get him integrated here. This was years ago. Now, that same father, we could see his face. We could see there's a lot of stuff that his daughter was going through, Brandon. And I think that seeing his face, we missed that, okay? We missed that. I missed that. We didn't have that. I didn't have that thought to do that. They didn't have that thought to do it. So the future of healthcare is going to be the integration. We have now integrated and incorporated individuals who would have never been there. We got a grandmother right now, one of my clinicians. We have a grandmother in one house, the mother with the youth in the other. Excuse me, the grandmother and the youth are together. The mother, and they're going to be giving custody back to her. We are able to have all three people on the phone there. As we try to integrate the youth back to her mother, we would have not done that because the mother and grandmother are having difficulties. You ain't coming over my house, daughter, but we can do it virtually. That's just one story. How can you not?
Right.
Does that make sense? How can you not integrate it if it's helping in that capacity? I'd be very concerned if the future, I know it's a slightly different question, if it didn't integrate telehealth in some capacity.
Dr. Darius, thank you so much for your time today. I really appreciate it.
The pleasure's mine. I really appreciate having the opportunity to be on here and speaking with you. You provided me with insights that I'm going to be integrating into the community here in Dallas. So thank you.
Awesome.